Because you're jumping back into the gap. All right, to coach, it's either sideline, two on the side, three on the side. That's off the second cut. Lead the country in offensive rebound.
Hey, coach. Welcome to the Basketball Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Oliver. Let's share the game. Before we get started with this week's podcast, I wanted to let you know that access is now open to the Basketball Immersion Platinum Collective Mastermind. This is an exclusive private next-level coaching development program for a very specific coach. Go to basketballimmersion.com/platinum to learn more. Coaches, excited today to have Mark Bennett with us. Mark runs Performance Develop Systems. We'll refer to it as PDS as short, which is a robust set of principles that can facilitate world-class learning and performance cultures and environments. And Coach, or Mark, first of all, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to share.
Well, we've known each other for a little bit. We've been in circles where I've heard so much about what you do, and I'm so excited to have this conversation. And I think it's such an important conversation for so many coaches to listen to. Let's start from the basics so that coaches get a real good feel of what you do. What are the three key elements to what you do?
So it's been around 28 years now developing this from real world, and it's developed into three key areas. The first thing is developing effective cultures that facilitate the right behaviors and the performance that impacts on the very elements that facilitate results and engagement. The second one is actually coaching the coaches in the software, so not the tech stack, but supporting coaches in how do I get players and athletes that are slightly disengaged or aren't learning as quick or continually making the mistakes in games under pressure, but they seem to do it right in practice. How do I know if it's actually learning going on? How do I load pressure, increase competency, et cetera, et cetera? All the software, if you like. And the third one is actually supporting the change. So one of the biggest elements that you have a problem with when people go away and listen to a podcast or go on training or spend a day with someone else is that you might think it's great, but the reality is when you go back into your own organization, your own environment, you might change for 2-3 weeks and you'll just regress straight back. So I've developed robust systems to help support the behavior changing influences the coaches so that under pressure, actually they don't regress themselves or will have a negative impact on the environment they're attempting to develop.
I love the last, I mean, all of it's great, but I love the last points especially, which is to support the change. Because again, coaches were notorious for getting all these great ideas and we're not always as effective at applying the ones that make the most impact on our players and on our performance as a coach. And that's great that you connect all three of these things together in terms of that. And I read a quote that's on your site, which is performance is a behavior, not an outcome. Can you explain yes. that? Because I think that's a great, great point.
Yes, if we use a basic basketball analogy. So if you look at basketball and you broke it down, is what everybody wants is they want to score more baskets than the opposition in simple terms. But if you broke that down and say, okay, well, what do you need to do to achieve that? And you can say, well, we need to score more and prevent the position from scoring as much as we do. Okay, but how do you do that? Well, we need to get ball into the ring and we need to stop them doing that. Okay, what's caused that? Well, players need to have the ball and be in the right position or block, defend. Okay, well, what causes that? Well, people need to be aware of what they're doing. They need to be able to scan. They need to be able to make consistently effective choices in the moment and don't let negative failures, self-perceived failures affect them in the next 5-10 seconds. They need to be on it in the present, continually scanning, making good choices and reviewing them live and committing to them. Well, we step back to that. Well, that's behaviors. So the reality is you can spend 10 years with an athlete developing technical and tactical, but if you haven't developed them so they can self-regulate and manage their own state, if they haven't got the skills to consistently stay in the present, to consistently scan, make effective choices, commit with intent, review the choice and the execution separately, live, under any type of pressure, unsupervised without the need for the coach, to accept feedback from peers live in games and in training, and to give it to read other players so you know if you make a mistake, they're losing out, I can have an effective impact. That's behaviors. So the reality is if you're looking at performance, the source of effective performance is effective behaviors. And what we don't spend enough time at is constantly putting that as one of the critical elements to develop in practice.
So When I reflect back on so much of my learning when it comes to skill acquisition, motor learning, and one thing that connects to this is that one of the goals of a coach is to develop independent performers, right? Performers that can work independent of you as a coach. And I find that so much of coaching seems to be so dependent on the coach that, one, there's not player-led development in so many ways. And then, two, we're not moving them along towards this independence. And whether independence is a reality or a possibility or not, that's our ultimate goal. Is that a fair summation of the ultimate goal of all of this?
Yeah, well, let's change that word, Chris, from independent to interdependent.
Perfect.
So what I mean, to just so everyone understands the meaning difference, which is key right to everything, is you go through stages. So traditional coaching, in many ways, not in all ways, you're developing dependent coaches, dependent athletes on the coach. Because what you're doing is you're saying, and you see it even at grassroots, and this is where we need to really develop it, even before they get high school, college, MBA, wherever it is, national teams, is we're developing players to do something. And as soon as they've done it, they look, I call it rubbernecking, turn to coach to check for approval if it was okay. And coach is narrating and shouting what to do, what they did wrong, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we're ingraining a dependent skill set, a dependent behavior. Now, independent would be, I don't need coach. I don't need my other players. I know what I need to do. I'm going to get it done. And if my other players aren't up for it, I'll just get annoyed and angry with them. And coaches talk to me, I'm just going to dial out when he starts shouting at me anyway. So that's independent. But interdependent is, I have to be internally focused, managing my state, all the things I said about the behavior, be confident about my role, what my responsibility, what it looks like, how to play the game, develop my tactical and tactical, unsupervised, when I'm training, all of that stuff. But when I'm on the court, when I'm in practice, I need to be able to accept feedback from peers, accept feedback from coach, even if coach is having a bad day. But I also need to be able to effectively self-evaluate and make my own choices and reach out to athletes and coaches if I need to either challenge them or ask them if I don't understand something for the support or to get them in check if they're making poor choices or their behavior. So you're totally right. Is traditional coaching has been developed over many, many years because we want the best out of athletes. No coach is out there. I've never met a coach that is deliberately attempting to sabotage a session. But many coaches just haven't been given the skills and the awareness to it. So actually, they're reliant on you. Do you know how to switch that over? And it won't take a session. It will take some weeks and months. But can you see the value in it? And do you know how to do it?
Well, I already got value out of this. I mean, just changing that word, that totally makes sense to me now. And yeah. It paints a better picture. So that's awesome. And clearly, this leads into something we talked about a little bit offline, which is this concept of there's almost these extremist positions. It's almost like people are digging in now to say, you know, I'm a traditional coach or I'm a modern coach or games approach coach, whatever you want to say. But I say this all the time, like, you're a blend of a lot of different things as a coach, and there shouldn't be extremist positions. But can you talk about that as it relates to these two concepts? Because you're saying basically you're not one side or the other, that you're a part of all of these processes as coaches.
Yeah. To be an effective coach, you cannot pick sides because what you're limiting is you're limiting your ability to be effective. So the whole point of... And this is where it's getting, and I'm totally on board with you, what you're saying there, Chris, is we're putting up barriers with many traditional coaches that have been years and years and years perfecting their game. And they have the barriers up with what's called game-led or athlete-centered, whatever you want to call it, because the people explaining it are explaining it wrong, or actually they're not doing it wrong. The reality is you cannot stand on the side and just do nothing and hope magic happens, because the reality is it's not going to happen. But you cannot just stand there and not develop the interdependency we just talked about. So you need to understand is there will be times where you need to step in and say, guys, we're doing this. No, that's wrong. I need to do a drill and break down here. There's also times when I go, look, I'm not stepping in right now. I'm going to throw scenarios at you and I'm going to give you time to work it out, even if you don't get it right. But, and this is a key thing, I'm going to train you up in a skill so you can self-evaluate, you can self-review. I can give you permissions on these things. So you have the internal software skills. So you have to understand is athlete-centered is not down one end of the spectrum of doing nothing. Effective world-class athlete-centered is a full spectrum from tell to allow. and everything in between.
Which comes back to this, that all coaching requires some type of coaching interventions. There are interventions that happen within coaching, and whatever way you use them, there's coaching interventions. And that's again, sometimes misconstrued when I say that we coach within the game, we coach within 5-on-5, you know, what would be called a games approach, but I'm stopping it. I'm using interventions just like traditional coaches. And what you're getting at as well is our behavior as coaches in those interventions, and then the ability of a player to be able to cope with those interventions.
Yeah, it's going back to, if you looked at the basics of any effective coach, this is just my opinion, and I think it's been over 30 sports now, from Olympic champions, world champions, European Commonwealth, down to grassroots, is the critical elements of an effective coach is their self-awareness of their emotional intelligence. So their awareness of their state and their ability to regulate it. The second element is their skill level to scan, to step back and be able to take in the data, not just follow the ball or think, right, I want players to do this, so I'm just looking for this. Is actually being able to scan, what's the behaviors like? Are they making choices? What do I see over here? Is someone running back in position that doesn't have the ball based on our parameters of what we'd agreed? And the more effective you are at scanning, the better data you will have. And then it's having the skills, if you're regulating well, is to go, right, in this moment, what's the best choice for me to make? If it's I need to stop and we need to walk through, talk through, then that's what you do. If it's, no, I need to let it run now, or I need to just pull someone else and do one of those hot reviews, just find out what's going on, put them back in. But if you can't regulate your state, if you have poor scanning, you're not going to get the effective data in. And if your emotions are ineffectively controlled, then actually you're not going to communicate effectively either. So out of all the technical and tactical you can talk about, if you don't have those basic competencies as a coach, and you don't, one, you're not aware of where you are now, then actually you're not going to be effective with the knowledge you have.
We're going to come back to scanning, because this is such an important part of this. And I think all of coaches, you know, ability to be able to obviously move from beginner to expertise, whatever that continuum is. So we'll come back to that, coach, because I want to do a deep dive on that. But let's come back. So you've worked with so many different organizations. You've worked with everything from Major League Baseball, Cleveland Indians. You've worked with NBA teams, Oklahoma City. You've worked with national federations, Basketball England, England Rugby, et cetera, et cetera. And you work with not just coaches, you work with players too, or athletes too. Is that correct?
Yes, I do both. The priority is I always attempt to put the energy in with the influencers, but there will be many times when I have coaches saying, Mark, I can't get through to this player, or this isn't working within the team. So I just take the session. Or, and there's times when I will do some one-to-ones with the players so the coaches can understand how you can get through. So often I'll be doing live demos. I think you had Coach Keane on, Alan Keane, didn't you, not so long ago. And I don't know if he shared the story where he was on a European qualifier with his national team. It was the first time I mentored him, and he allowed me to take the session with players I'd never met, just so he could see the impact of it, even if I didn't know the technical and tactical focus areas. So the majority, it's always coaches, but there's always times when I'll support athletes if the coach needs to see, or if they've got barriers to go, I can't get through to this guy.
It's great. So we can talk about Alan Keane if you want in terms of examples, but can you give us, like, what does PDS look like in real life situations, or examples of how coaches like Alan have used this system? Give some coaches some pictures of this.
If you were to see it, if you were to walk into a session and you would see it, what you would see is the players turning up, and they're turning up always early. They're interacting with each other. They would have had their own WhatsApp or Slack group. They'll help support each other long before they come to the training, so they understand what they need to do. If they've got a player that forgets stuff, they'll be on them making sure they turn up. They'll make sure everybody's ready to go, their hydration, the warm-up, they'll be owning it. So the coach will not have to remind them the commitment. It will be the players pushing themselves on a warm-up, the level of excellence that's been pre-agreed. If it's unacceptable, you'll see players challenging other players in an effective way, and other players accepting it, and they might even reset the warm-up. As soon as the coach is going, the interaction, the dialogue is highly respectful. They can challenge a coach respectfully if they feel they need to. The coach is comfortable allowing them to do that, and he will challenge them back if needed to. But the dialogue and the interaction and the respect and the attention to just their confidence of what they need to do in every session, if they're not sure, that ability to ask. You'll also see in every single session that everybody will commit to every choice they make. what you'll notice is the intensity of the sessions will be very, very high. The amount of talking will be quite low even when you stop. And the dialogue, you'll see the coach talking less, even though when he's in charge, just because he's developed the skill sets that he needs within the players. So the environment, it will be a lot more intense than people are used to. There'll be a lot more interaction. And one of the obvious elements I see when people come to watch any of the sessions where it's going live is that how much the players are doing and how much less the coach is doing. But back to that point, Chris, what the coach is doing, he's stepping back and scanning. So he's scanning the warm-up, he's scanning seeing and walking in, he's scanning, always putting that covert recall check at the beginning of the session. I think Alan mentioned that, where you just, you know what they've worked on before. So you just, after warm-up, you just let them play and you're scanning for the recall of the stuff you worked on before with no chat, no reminders. And then your intervention is based on the success of that. And actually, are the players helping, supporting, challenging, or have they all got it?
Well, let's go to scanning then. You brought it up again. And what I always come back to is, and I learned this through my teaching education, and it's always been something that's been in my mind. But basically, more experienced coaches, in my experience, have this ability to distinguish the unimportant from the important. And that's essentially what you're trying to train them with this scanning is what is important to intervene or not intervene with, and then to anticipate and predict likely outcomes. Is that essentially what we're talking about? Or what more is there to this scanning that can help us as coaches practically do a better job scanning?
If we went the ABC of it, Chris, we need to be able to regulate our state. That's number one, because our state impacts on what we see and hear and how we see it. So if we think about it as impacting, inputting data, effective scanning is you put yourself in a position of the room, the court, where you can see and hear everything. You step back from it, so you're not getting caught into, I'm just chasing the ball or watching, but you're scanning for the areas that you've pre-agreed. Now, here's the important element. It's pre-agreed, so the players have an expectation of what it is as well. What you're not doing is having an expectation internally the players don't truly understand, because that's when coaches can get very frustrated. So you're purely scanning behaviors first. You're stepping back. Are the behaviors acceptable? Again, if players aren't committing, why are we talking about technical and tactical? Because it's not going to come off. We can't review it. And then we're scanning for the elements we were said success was for the session. We're not looking at everything. We're not looking at the non-critical. We're just scanning for that critical. But importantly, the players also are aware of that. So when we reference and review, we're not just stopping session and talking about 20, 30 things. We're focused on the very critical elements we've pre-agreed is what the success criteria is for the session.
Pre-agreed. So go through that process for us. When is this happening? Is this happening before we get on the court? Is this happening where?
There's two elements. There's the what we call the non-negotiables. So that's the way we are as a team. So it's not the list of names that you see on a wall that everyone forgets that pre-season or the chat. It's what we live by every single day. So every time it's what we do. So if that's normally behavioral led, but we'll always play to a style. So, you know, you give me three different styles of basketball teams, Chris, that you would say these are common styles. If you looked at a team, you go, this is this type of team. What would three be?
Sorry, is it styles you're saying? Or
yeah, just purely the way a team plays. So are they?
Let's just say, they play fast, they play slow, or they play somewhere in the middle in terms of that. I mean, that's generally, we can talk about tempo in terms of variable styles.
Yeah, so if you're looking, if you've said to a team, okay, what we will always do, we will always get there first. So when it comes to any turnover ball, any 50-50 ball, we will always be there first. That's the type of team we are. We're a fast break team. So anytime we're looking for opportunities to break, we're scanning, we're finding the place, and you're finding a gap, because that's what we do. So if you've said that's the style of the team, it would be unacceptable for a team that actually wouldn't sprint for breaks, wouldn't be driving through, because that's not part of our DNA and how we play. But the other thing is that point about staying in the moment and committing to everything, being present, whatever it is, or effectively scanning. If we say these are non-negotiables, we do this all the time, then the coach will look for these non-negotiables first. So this is what we say. Whenever we step on court, this is what we do. This is what we look like. And this, we've all agreed, this is what unacceptable would look like. So the coach is scanning for that. But importantly, the players are as well, because they need to hold each other accountable. Then the second thing you look for is what you've said success is. So if you're saying, if you're working on a type of defense or a transition or a type of attack, or if the opposition team is switching a type of defense, how quickly you can spot that and adapt, whatever it might be. So then you're looking for that secondly. So you're not looking for all the other little bits that may be important. You'll note them, but actually it's not critical for this particular session, so you won't mention them. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. And I've always, so there's a few things that come up with all of this. And that one is, I've always had agreements with my players. And it's basically an agreement that I can coach you. And that's essentially what we're trying to negotiate here as well, is this agreement that, hey, listen, is it okay to me to correct you and coach you and help you get better? Because again, I think without that agreement, it's really hard to develop players. And this whole process helps that agreement much easier in my mind. It's just a cleaner process. But the other part is reminding, right? This is helping us remind players of those non-negotiables, those pre-agreements, whatever they may be through the whole process, which I think sometimes as coaches, we come up with all these buzzwords or these agreements or non-negotiables or whatever, but then we never talk about them.
Yeah.
We don't bring them up enough.
Yeah. And that's why the scanning, you have to be alive with it all the time. This is a part of supporting the change that I do with the coaches. The principles I use supporting coaches and mentoring them are no different to the principles the coach needs to use with the athletes. So I always use the principle of player first, player last. And what we mean by that is the coach shouldn't be reminding of players if they've already spoke about it, they've already agreed it. Because what you're saying there is, guys, you don't have to think, I'll remind you. What we need to do is player first, player last. So if it's something's unacceptable, it's an individual player. I'm looking for, and I think Alan may have mentioned that rule of three, is I'm looking for, as a player now, self-recognizing and self-changing. No. So now I go to two. Are other players around him, his teammates spotted him and had a positive impact? Yes, it plays on. No. Okay, now what I'm going to do, I either, two choices, I can reset the whole session, go, guys, stop, reset 10 seconds. This is why. I don't have to say anything more. They have a 10-second check sorted out. We go again. No need to stop for a discussion. Or I just call on that one player. So that's a one-to-one hot review. So just shout at a player, rotate them out with someone else and go, just review what happened there. Talk to me. If they don't get it straight away, okay, talk to them about our non-negotiables. Okay, now talk to me. And now what I'm looking for is a player giving me the answers. Okay, so what's preventing you right now? When did you recognize it? Oh, straight away, coach. What's preventing you from making the change? I'm giving permission to commit right now. Can you show me? Yes, show me. Push them back out. So one of the key things that we kind of get caught up in as coaches, we want players to do well, but kind of we're killing them with kindness. And when I say killing them with kindness, shouting aggressively at them, in some coaches, that's love from them. You know, because they're doing it because they want to help the player. But actually, they're not helping the player because all they've done is remind the player. So now you've taken the responsibility and accountability off the player because the player's thinking, I'll just wait for coach. And then I'll just switch off, nod at coach, and then carry on. So actually, it's a soft environment. It's not a tough environment because actually, we're back to a dependent player.
Well, and there's a lot of things here, and this is great. That's stimulating our thinking. So for me, everything comes back to, am I heightening their mental effort during a practice? Because what leads to retention, what leads to transfer ultimately in terms of physical is this heightening mental effort. And when I listen to you talk, it appears to me everything that I'm doing within the practice is trying to engage the player in more thinking to make, which learning is very conscious, right? So is this part, do I have an understanding of that I'm trying to heighten their mental effort and thinking?
Yeah, if think of it this way, is we spend a lot of time on developing the hardware in athletes. So the hardware is their S&C, their conditioning, what to eat, how to sleep, turning your phone off an hour before you go to bed to allow your brain to rest down, making sure you're doing your cool downs and your warm-ups, giving you the technical understanding where you can go away and practice, and the tactical awareness within your role and within the team. They're all hardware. The problem we've got is we're not spending enough energy on the software. The software is actually player self-regulating, not relying on external drivers, i.e. coach and other players, to get them to be focused in the present, to commit, to self-manage their state. Back to the emotional intelligence element. So we kind of do it, we've got to think of it in the same way as we think about the tactics. We don't want to, if a player's not getting it right, we don't want to be shouting and stepping in because actually now they're switching off. and then now accountability. We're looking for, can they work it out very quickly, put a hand up, recognize I was unacceptable, but next time, and they can show you. And if that's not happening, are the other players doing it? Now I step in. So if you think of that as a, you do that within tactics, if you're effective, but think of it exactly the same in the software. Is that player not self-regulating? Are they lazy? Have they had a couple of poor little passes or something hasn't gone well? Are they now eating themselves up and now it's negatively impacting on where they are? Are they sulking? Whatever it might be, are they getting angry? Yes, they are. Can they self-regulate it? No. Can their peers self-regulate it? Because I've given them the tools and we're practicing this. And now I step in at three. So my always point is set up environments in practice to one, consciously develop their skills so they understand self-reviewing, and then set up pressure situations to give them opportunities to practice to get better when things aren't going well. So I always see struggle in practice as an opportunity to see how you can manage struggle. So we will overtly initially say, right, I'm going to put some struggle on you now. I'm going to put some things in, bad ref calls. I'm going to get you fatigued, whatever it might be. And then once they're effective at that, then I'm going to do it without them expecting it. So I want them to see, can you self-manage? And if you can't, can your peers before I step in?
What are some examples of questions we should be using as coaches more often to elicit some of these desired outcomes?
So it's a good question, Chris. And this might sound a bit crazy, but bear with me. My whole point of with a coach's aim should be to make themselves redundant. Now, they never will, because there'll always be other edges and little things and pressure loads where, you know, you need to be telling them on timeouts. However, the bread and butter fundamentals, and as they expand, you only get to a point that they don't need reminding from you on that. They can self-manage and do that themselves. So if we're going down that route, questioning, my whole thing is you want to get to a point where you don't have to ask any questions, because we've developed players where they can self-evaluate. Now, if they're self-evaluating and then they're effective because we're setting up scenarios where they can share and evaluate vocally with you. So we want them to show us the answer, but also we want them to tell them. So then when we come in and we say, okay, review, that should be my only question. Jimmy, review. Now, Jimmy then says, okay, so this is what I did, went around there, shouldn't have made the pass there, should have pulled it in, shot over to Steve, wrong call, next time I'm going to this. But actually, the pass was good, it was just the wrong choice. So, okay, that's exactly what I saw. Internally, I'm going, yes, yes, yes. Now I'm going, okay, now show me. Can he now show the change and not just in that moment? Now, if then on the review process we've taught, and actually they're gray in the review, i.e., forgive my language here, Chris, but if you said to someone review and they said, that was crap, well, straight away I'd be saying, that's not review, that's an emotional reaction. Review. Okay, so did you commit? Yes, coach. Okay, what happened tactically? What were your choices? So then they go, these were the choices. Okay, which one did you go for? Did you commit to it? What was the execution like? Execution was good, coach. Okay, so we're down to choices. So if you do that again, what would you change? This one, coach. Yes, we've got it. Now show me. So I teach a review process, which is a basic experiential learning, which is, first rule is scan. So you can take in the data. What are the options? Make a choice, commit to it. Then afterwards, a simple review is, did I commit? Yes. Right. How was the choice? How was the execution? Would I change anything in either? Yes, no, on I go. If I didn't commit, not review, right, next time I'm just going to commit. I know what the problem is, I didn't commit. So if you train all your players to do that, which you can very quickly, I've done this down with four-year-olds, Chris, that's been effective, even in inner city schools, never mind, you know, in academies, all the way up to professional full adults. And it's very, very effective because they can start using that live in games. It's a self-thinking, self-managing. But if you set scenarios up where you can actually start saying review and they go through this framework, they're giving you information, so much data. You're going, I already know the answer, but now I'm getting from you in a objective, clinical way, are you seeing what I'm seeing? And if there's a gap, then we could either pass it to another, Steve, what are you thinking? What Danny just said there, do you agree or not? Or you get into a dialogue. Now, this is a point back to the sliding scale. If they're totally wrong or they're just waffling, you can go, actually, no, it's this and this is why. So then you can put in a draw. Guys, it's clear now a lot of you are confused within this because of based on how you're reviewing. Okay, I need to explain to you, this is what it actually looks like. Let's talk through it. Let's walk through it. Let's have a breakout, whatever it might be. But because they're self-reviewing, they're giving you the data accurately and good information to allow you to respond. Does that make sense?
It does. I mean, it totally makes sense to me. And I hope coaches are getting so many of these concepts and the value of it, because tremendously valuable. Because one of the things that strikes me, you talked about emotional regulation. You've said that a number of times for a coach.
Yeah.
One of the things that's always struck me is how much better of a coach I am when competition is not involved, right? Yes. Like, as soon as competition's involved, say, you know, we're like in preseason, I'm a far better coach because we're not necessarily building directly towards a game that week. We're building towards a number of games, but competition is not directly there. I'm a better coach because I'm more emotionally regulated. As soon as you add competition, look out. So what are some of these things that we can do as coaches to better regulate ourselves?
Well, first of all, it's the toughest thing. There's no question, because coaches are passionate. You know, they want success. Now, there's two things to this. Well, there's a few, but they break into two elements. Is in that game, you need to understand, same as in practice, for me to be effective, so if I say Mark is coach, write me now in game, what's the best coach for my players right now? What does it look and feel like? It's like wearing a suit. Back to that awareness. Now I'm aware I'm getting angry. Now I'm aware I'm getting frustrated. Okay, now I'm aware of it. Here's my practice, my regulation. What's going to be a good coach for me right now? And it, forget ego. That's what I need to be in then. Also setting up with assistant coaches and even players. Alan's done it with his players. Once you develop this culture, if I start losing it and I'm ineffective now as a coach, you can permission to your assistant coaches or your players go, coach, this is one of those moments and I have to accept. So you're setting up a support network there. The second thing is how you're measuring success in the game. Because if it's based on the scoreline, you're not in control of that. You're only in control of your players now. How are they scanning? How are they committing? The choices they're making, their execution to the choices they're making live, adapting to the opposition. That's all you can measure. So if they're doing all they've shown you they can do in practice, then why are you getting angry at them? If you're asking them to do something that you've never let them do in practice without you shouting or guiding or talking through it, then why are you expecting them to do it now? Because they won't be able to, because you haven't put in situations in practice where you've stepped away, loaded pressure, situations, without talking about it first, to give them the opportunity to practice and layer this ability to adapt under pressure in games. So I always think is, one, you definitely need to film yourself. I mean, I use the GoPro type cameras on the chest, but you know, there's enough ways where you can put a Bluetooth mic on your, have a camera on the back in games as well. Film yourself and watch it back just so you can see how accurate am I compared to what I think I am. Because however I would mentor a coach or a player, that's the first thing I always do, because the inaccuracy is quite large. So a coach might go, I know I get annoyed and frustrated, but they really don't know how much and how much it's destroying the performance of their players.
A quick interruption of the podcast to remind you that coming up September 8th is our BI Academy one-day coaching clinic at Cal State Fullerton in the Los Angeles area. Go to www.basketballimmersion.com/clinics to register and learn more. Special for this clinic is that any coach that's registered as a Basketball Immersion member can bring their staff or friends for just $75 per coach. Well, and it makes sense. I mean, and self-awareness, you've said many times, is such a such a talent. And it's something that has to be worked on and developed, right? It doesn't just happen.
Yes. Yep. Yes, it's a key. All the guys that I mentor, all levels, that's where we start from, is I continually drive their behaviors, their own behaviors and their self-awareness. So we have agreements in place. After every single practice, they do a hot review to me on WhatsApp or Slack, and it based on self first, on their behaviors, then other coaches, then team. And that's after every single session, after every game. And then they can send me the video with the pro teams, and they review, I look for it, then we have a dialogue once a week. So it can't be forgotten, because I'm relentless. If we agree something with one of my clients, I'm the most relentless, patient, consistent person you ever had, because I know how difficult it is for a coach to change their behavior under the pressures they're at, especially when you come into the performance levels. So they need someone honest to give them a kick up the butt and also an arm around the shoulder to help support their change.
And a lot of coaches will say, okay, this is about coaching this generation. But it's really not. Like, this is just about being a more effective coach. And I hate when we generalize it and say, oh, this is about this generation. They can't handle hard coaching. Well, no, that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is we're more effective as coaches with these strategies.
Yeah, I would say traditional coaching is the softest coaching. I'd say effective athlete-centered is the toughest coaching. So humans have never changed. You know, they may be physiologically less robust because we have central heating. In the houses I grew up, we had no central heating. We had no water. We had no telephone. But I quite like central heating now, so if it's cold, I put it on. But it, so it's not a psychological, physiological thing. It's the base of humans haven't really changed in that manner. Coaches over years and years are still making dependent players. They always did back in the day. If we go back further when there was no formal coaches, actually athlete center was more going on anyway, as I'm explaining it, because players were self-coaching players. You know, they weren't stopping for these long chats. There wasn't video analysis. There wasn't coach stood there for 3 minutes talking. There were players working out, playing, problem solving. A player knew more, he'd go, guys, stop. I need to walk you through this. Right, we're going to do it this way. Everything that we should be doing now. But what's happened is over the years is coaching has been so highly tech. The pressure's been on the coaches to get results. So coaches feel the only way I can get across my player is shout or tell them. But the reality is they're only doing that way because they haven't given the skills to the players to self-evaluate, self-review. And also they haven't explored their own skill set. So they're working with quite a small skill set as a coach. And they're not utilizing the bigger toolkit that's out there. Back to, there's still time to shout. There's still time to stop. There's still time to come in. You might know some players that need a shout to get them fired up, but you would know that. But also you need the other player to go in these times of trauma. This player just needs a whisper in the ear and a little hand touch because you've worked out that's what's best for them. And that's the difference between effective coaching and just saying, I'm this type of coach.
This is great. And, I've always said, and I guess what you're saying is validating this, is that what's soft and where I think coaches are soft is when they teach something and then they don't hold players accountable to actually doing that. And I see that at all levels of coaching is that they'll put them in a drill. And this is one of my arguments against drills for a lot of coaches is they put them in the drill and they coach the crap out of the drill. But then when they go into scrimmage or game or whatever game conditions, there's no accountability to doing what they had in the drill. And that's what strikes me about what you're saying is the difference. Like, we can act like we're hard, but what's really hard is holding players accountable to doing what these non-negotiables or these pre-agreements are.
Yeah. And you look at I haven't looked at all, you know, I haven't been lucky enough to go into all high performance environments, but the most successful environments I've been in, the coaches are, it's a team. The coaches, it is family. There is love there, but it's tough love. And it's tough love because they're going, I'm not going to be reminding you all the time. I'm not going to be shouting at you all the time. You can't switch off in these practice sessions because there's an expectation that you need to learn and understand this stuff. So if you come back on the next session and you're just relying on coach to shout and tell you what to do and you think you can switch off, it's not going to happen here because that's not the type of coach I'm going to be. So that's totally opposite the traditional, where actually you can get a player, if he's quite gifted in his physical ability and his, you know, tech, you can get a player that can lazily cruise through practice because they don't have to remember anything because coach will be there shouting, reminding them. And then they wonder why, under high pressure situations, certain players continually make the same mistakes when they're put under pressure. And then when you do a scout, which happens tons in basketball, they know, right, we do this with this player and they're not very good. Well, the reason they're not very good is because the coach isn't actually giving them the tools, the software, and then putting environments in place to develop that player beyond what they are. And this is the difference between just working on tech and not developing the person, not just the player. Because it's the person that manages state, make decisions, commit, that becomes tough in traumatic situations. When you're 20 behind or things aren't going well, that's when the great person steps up. The player is just the tech, the dribbling, the physicality. So actually, athlete-centered is the toughest way. And if you've ever been to any of my environments, and I mean, Alan Keane's a great example of that. They'll be the toughest practice sessions you'd ever see, but you don't see the coach getting upset. as throwing a tantrum. You see the players holding each other accountable, and they'll be driving the session. The coach doesn't have to because the players are owning it.
Help me. And you said this, humans coach. We're humans coaching humans, right?
Yeah.
We're people coaching people. So, but help me understand this, because one of the challenges for coaches, and especially for young coaches, is to not act the stereotypical way as a coach. That someone would come into your practice or someone could watch you coach, and they see you sitting there and they think, oh, you're not into it. You're not into the game. Like, it's such crap. But I hear this all the time. And it was such a challenge for me to get beyond that as a coach. Even assistant coaches, players be, come on, coach, get into the game. And if I'm not standing up or I'm not, you know, being intense, then I'm not into the game, which is complete crap. So help me be better with that.
Well, one of the key things you have to be, I'll give you an example that isn't basketball, but it's an interactive sport of rugby and soccer. One of the interventions I have in Sheffield, and they've got a place in Australia where they've got full age groups from all the way down up to academy level. And one of the processes they go through, they have an intervention with any new coach coming in. They have an intervention when new parents come in. Anyone that's interacted, any assessor comes in, where first of all, before they can get into any dialogue about how am I coaching, they agree what effective coaching looks like. So one of the things they'll have is they'll say, parents, you may be used to seeing this, the coach shouting, etc. But what I want you to do is look at this. Now, I'll even share videos. Sometimes they can show examples of, okay, what are you seeing here? Okay, now I want you to look at the players, how they're self-managing, how they're accepting feedback, which is a critical element, by the way, Chris, is developing players to effectively accept feedback without thinking someone's picking on them, which is athlete-centered, it's robust, which is not linking into traditional. So you get everyone that's actually ever going to get into dialogue with you about coaching to agree what an effective coach looks like. Then they can see a session, then you can have the dialogue. Where we all trip up is everyone's got different ideas of what an effective coach is. We haven't agreed it. So what they're seeing is going to be totally different than somebody else. So you're just going to get conflict because we haven't pre-agreed what we're looking for and why. Back to what's the purpose of coaching? Well, we need to develop players so they're self-thinking, self-managing, relentless, live under any type of situation without relying to rubberneck to coach. Because that's effective team. The All Blacks, at their dominance, that's what they do. They don't keep looking over the coach. You don't see coach telling them what to do because they've developed it. So this is that whole point of agreeing what it looks like before you can start the dialogue.
And I have to give disclaimers at my summer basketball camps where I go in and I just give disclaimers saying to parents especially, this is what you're going to see. And there's still some that don't get it. They don't understand. But I love how you frame that because I think that's so important for coaches, regardless of what your philosophy is. I mean, to just be able to explain it. So another question, do we do too many group interventions as coaches versus we should be doing more individual interventions? Because to paint a picture, like in a basketball practice, I stop it. And even though Joey made the mistake, I'm going to stop everyone for Joey to make sure Joey gets the point. Can you talk about that fine line?
Yeah, so it's back to not initially developing the skills of the players in self-reviewing. So this is where the scanning comes back. So if you're effectively scanning, the only time you need to stop a group session is if it's on a behavioral thing where they're not interacting and accepting feedback based on that's what you want them to do live in a game under pressure. Is actually if someone's making poor choices, they can figure out live within a split seconds, accept, etc. behaviors. So if it's not that, if it's Stevie keeps making the same decisions, if you haven't developed a self-evaluation process, you pulling Stevie off and then go, Steve, what's going on, is just going to look at you blank and wait for you to tell him the answer because that's the culture you've developed. If you develop a self-reviewing process, then you've spotted now you're scanning Stevie. Okay, actually someone's reached out. He's still doing the same thing. He looks like he's committing. He's just committing to run things. Right, Steve, call out. He runs out, you're rotating with someone else. Okay, talk to me, review. Stevie can then review. Then you can identify, is it a commitment thing? Is it a execution thing? Or is it a choice thing? If it's a choice thing, now we've recognized it's a choice thing, is it an understanding issue? Or actually, is he only under pressure, confident at making this choice because his competency in the others, he feels a lack of confidence in doing. So under pressure, he'll continue to revert to the same one. Now we've recognized what it is, we put in the intervention for that. So we're back to, if we can develop a self-review process, it allows us to go, right, I'm scanning as an individual, pull out, bang, we've got it, great, back in again. And if it's a group thing, we stop for the group. But this is generalizing, but you're right, is we do far too much stopping a session when we don't have to really stop the session. And then we do too much of us just talking. And the players, honestly, a lot of them are disengaged, not really taking it anyway. Then they'll walk over, what does coach want us to do? So it's back in short-term recall. Then what you might see in the next 10, 15, 20 seconds, they'll do exactly what you wanted you to do because they're just working on short-term memory. But then when you go to a game, they'll continue to make the mistakes they did before because all they did, they just did what you told them to do based on short-term memory. So there's so many issues with traditional, but again, if you haven't developed them to know how to self-evaluate, your dialogue's going to be difficult when you start doing the one-to-ones.
Great, great stuff. And does one of the things that gets misconstrued in this approach is how does technical and tactical fit inside these principles? Do sometimes coaches miss that concept that it's all intertwined?
Yeah, it's a common one, Chris, when you start to question coaches about behaviors, because it's, you know, if you say to a coach behavior, same as a teacher, normally they think, well, someone's done something wrong. Because the only time my parents were pulled in, which was quite commonly when I was at school, is the teachers called them up and said, we'd like to speak to you about your son's behavior. Well, it was never a good thing. So we've got to get them to understand this. Behavior is not a good or bad thing, but it underpins everything that we do within how our behavior is and the players. So what can happen is a lot of coaches start going, well, hang on a minute, I got into coaching to start coaching the game. So you're telling me we can't talk about tactics if our behaviors aren't good enough. And this is where they need the support to go, well, the short answer is, you're right. You can't talk about tactics if they're not committing to anything, because you can talk all day. But if they're not committing to it, how effective do you think the tactics are going to be? Oh, not very good. Okay. So how are you doing it? Developing the players. So this is another thing, Chris, I always say early on in interventions, let's just have one session. The success criteria for this session is learning the rule of three. Or success criteria for this session is we will scan and we will commit to every choice we make, whatever it is. And that's the success criteria. And then we'll just play 5-on-5. We can break it down, different numbers, whatever it is. But our focus is developing the software to support the hardware. What we tend to do is we get so caught up in the tech tax, we go, we've got to get this covered. We've got so many weeks. We've got a game next week. We've got to cover this element. Is the players aren't self-evaluating. They're not self-regulating. They're not committing to anything. And they're not remembering anything because they're just relying on telling you what to do in short-term recall. So you're attempting to push tech and tact. But the reality is, it will come unstuck in game time because the players don't truly understand it. They can't self-manage it. They haven't practiced it and self-reviewed it live. So all they'll do is they'll just rely on your timeouts and you shouting on the court, which is reactional, not proactive. So if you come against a self-managing, self-thinking team, they'll always beat you like for like because your players are living in the past because they're waiting for you to tell them what they did wrong. So there's many elements to it, but it's getting the coaches to understand. It won't take you long to get them to understand, just commit to things, just go for it, just be in the present. And then we can start recognizing, let's teach you how to self-review. Now I can understand what you're not getting, what you are. As soon as that starts driving, it won't take long. I mean, a few sessions, so long as you keep it alive, obviously, and not forget about it. Your tech tack becomes easier. They will learn quicker. Their understanding will be better. Their recall and long-term memory of it will improve. So the tech tack learning becomes easier. The performance becomes easier.
How does a coach take on this approach while retaining their uniqueness as a coach or a person?
Well, you always will. So if I could show you 20 coaches that I've worked with over the last 10 years at high level, they're all effective at using my principles. If you watched every single session, they'd all be different. You know, what we're saying is that the same as now, a simple question for you now, Chris, there's the same amount of tactics out there, the same amount of technical to throw a ball, to drill, or to pass. But actually, if you looked at every player out there, they all do it. Many do it slightly differently, and many teams play in different ways because the coach has a style, he has a way. And going back to Cleveland Indians when I was working with, it was a high school I was working with as part of the intervention with Indians, St. Ignatius. And one of the coaches there asked this same question. He says, you know, Mark, I feel I'm not being myself. You know, I feel I'm being a bit stiff and it feels a bit false. So it's getting them to understand is it might feel a bit awkward because it's a new skill. You're at cognitive level. But still be you. But actually, do you really know what you are as a coach? Or have you tried to be somewhere else? Because you think this is what a coach should look like when I first did my first coaching course or my first coaching job. So if you're out with your friends, you know, you, what type of person are you? Are you patient? Are you passionate? Are you a good listener? You know, do you like the engagement? Because find out who you are, and then the technical and tactical and these other software skills is just allowing you to do it better. So it's getting them embrace their personality. I feel, Chris, there's a lot of coaches out there that actually are trying to be someone they're not, because that's what they think everyone expects from them, as opposed to actually sitting down and asking themselves, what type of coach do I want to be? You know, fit in with my personality, the type of person I am, and find out, and then back yourself along that journey.
I couldn't agree more. And that was essentially what I was trying to make the point about, how we're trying to live up to a media representation of a coach, or yeah, a parent's representation, rather than be ourselves. So, Coach, maybe quickly give us a few practical things used by grassroots coaches or hard profile coaches, that practical things that they do with their teams that fit into your system.
So that rule of three that I've mentioned a few times, that's a game changer. So all we're saying is that very early on, we just say to players, and I mean, it's so simple, but it's so powerful, to say, look, let me explain to you what excellence is. And we share this with all players. Excellence is doing the best you can with what you have in the present moment. I don't care if Jimmy is faster than you. I don't care if John's been doing basketball for 5 more years and is a better shooter. I'm not interested. I'm interested in what you have right now. You're doing the best you can in every single moment. You pursue excellence in every single second, from getting up in the morning. So I'll tell you this little short story that I share is, getting up in the morning is, you've got choices to make. You can turn off your phone and have another 10 minutes in bed, half an hour snooze, or you can get up, have your pint of water by the bed, do your mobility, have a quality breakfast, get there on time. Your bag's been picked the night before. You get the training early. You commit. When you go into the gym, you don't just cruise. You know what you want to get out of the session. Every single rep and movement, doing the best you can in that moment, because you're training the mind to overcome, to be the best you can in every single moment. But each of those moments, you have the other choice, where you can take the shortcut, you can be lazy, you can daydream, you can go through the motions. So everything in life is about choices, but you can only pursue excellence in every moment. I will never ask you anything more than you pursuing excellence in every moment, but that's what I ask you of me. So we need to agree what that looks like in every moment, especially when we're here in practice, and you need to share with me what it looks like for me when I'm a great coach, when I'm a bad coach. And then we hold each other accountable for it. So it's kind of, that's the philosophy we want to build. And then we keep that alive. So we're saying, okay, so when you come in, guys, what would excellence look like if I blow the whistle and you come in? What would that look like? Would it be walking? Would it be, no, it'd be sprinting in, coach. Why? Because the quicker we can get in, the more time we got to chat, the more we can get out. So that's awesome for game time. So we see the value. Okay, so if you don't, what needs to happen? Are you going to rely on me? No. We need to be telling each other. So if someone tells you something, are you going to push them away because you're feeling fatigued or things aren't going well? No, I have to accept. How are you going to accept? Hand touch, thumb up, great. Show me now. And then what we're looking for is those little moments. And guarantee you, within 5-10 minutes when you call them in, somebody will jog in. You're looking for, then you introduce that rule of three, self, then peer support, accepting feedback from peers, but reaching out, scanning, and then only step in. So the aim is never to get the three. In this stuff I know you can own and do, you back yourselves and you hold each other accountable and you support each other, but you accept the feedback because you know someone's doing it to help you be the best in that moment. They're doing it to help you. So that as a philosophy, if you just think that way and share that with everything you do, and then you keep that alive, it's a two-way thing, then your game, your practice will start to change just based on that simple principle.
Awesome. How does a coach commit to this way of coaching when results matter? So if I want to change my coaching and use this system, how do I do it at the same time that obviously my job, like I say, so many levels of coaching, it's about job preservation more than about innovation. Yeah. So how do I do this while the results matter?
Well, there's some auditory things you can do to back yourself with evidence of how well you're doing as a coach. So first thing you can start doing is, straight after warm-ups, you put a covert observation phase in, where you know you've worked on your day training. This is a content we're covering. I think the players have got it. So we've covered this in the last session before. After the warm-up, you throw a situation in that allows them, without you discussing or reminding them, to select the choices they've worked on and commit to it at the level of expectation that you've got. If they're doing that without you stepping in, you know you're doing a good job. But here's the reality. If you're continually stepping in and shouting and reminding them, I can guarantee you when you do that, they won't remember it. And you'll be realizing, oh my God, they don't know what I think they do. I've got to keep reminding them. So straight away then, that will allow you to go, okay, so what can we do in the session before we leave to ensure they can do it? Well, we need to throw scenarios in without reminding them. And let's see if they can actually work it out and start to problem solve without relying on me to remind them. Okay, so if we do that before the session, at some point in the session before the end, real life, and then we do the covert recall, we're going to start getting data in it. Go, now the players are getting it. But because you're doing that, you know you have to step away. You know the players need to understand it better because we're now not just running drill, drill, drill. We're running situational against an opposition that is attempting to break you down, your transition, your defense, or your attack. So as soon as you do that, that's giving you data how effective or ineffective you are as a coach. I guarantee you the effective will be at some point in sessions, you're going to have to step back. If the players can't do it, you're going to have to step in and go, where is it? What's preventing you? Is it an understanding thing? Is it a situational thing? Have we not spent enough time working on this without me reminding you? Have we not done enough scrimmaging because we're too busy just doing the drills that don't come alive when the opposition do this? And then you start the dialogue. So in a very short period of time, you're going, you guys need to do it without me. This is allowing me to know how well you are. This covert recall and data finding at the beginning after warm-up is telling me how good I've been coaching or not. If they all can't do it, your coaching is unacceptable. Let's be frank. But now we look back at the last sessions. How many times were the players decision-making? How many times were I putting scenarios in without me reminding them and stepping back to see if they can do it without me? And if the answer is actually hardly any, then there's your answer. So what can I change now? Then I check again, covert recall. Now the players are getting it. Right, that's backing me and telling me I'm now starting to be better in the session. And just by doing that, it will give you some confidence and some auditory measure to how effective you are. So the reality is if they're still getting it in those scenarios, and now you're loading pressure, they're still getting it, you're coaching well. So there's no problem.
Love it. Love it. Obviously, working with you is number one. But let's say a coach can't work with you. How does a coach develop these principles of coaching consistently without your support?
There's always, obviously, when I work with an organization, with a team, even the teams in the States, now I'll initially set up the training and then we just set up Slack or WhatsApp. So, we share little video clips. We're constantly doing the reviewing. So it's, you don't have to be there, but they're having that support. I always think you have to have some sort of quality baseline training. So yes, there's podcasts out there like this. I hope, Chris, that this will stimulate thought and maybe get people to start thinking, that's something I need to reflect on. I'll just go and film myself. Or actually, I need to find out more about this. I'm now recognizing what athlete-centered is and I see the value. But you're still going to be good at it. What you need to do then is I need to go now on a training course to give me the tools. Now, if like I run those masterclasses for a day anywhere in the world where coaches can come, we run it, they see a live example, we give them the tools. And then all we do is we set up a free support coach group. So we get the coaches, they get a WhatsApp group or a Slack group, and we agree before they leave, okay, so how many times are you going to do a review? And you'll talk to each other based on the behaviors first, dropping a little 5-minute video clip. So the reality is you need, one, the baseline of understanding of the competencies. Step two, next critical, is you need a support network. So if it's not me, you still need to set up a support network that you will honor once you pre-agree how often you're going to interact and what acceptable and unacceptable is. If you don't have those two things, although just by exploring and watching a video, you will identify things, I'm sure you'll adjust, you're not going to have the impact you could have by going through those two steps. And I think you need both. As we discussed before, with no support network, you're going to regress. Support network with no true knowledge and understanding, you're just going to continually discuss stuff that actually isn't the stuff you need to know because you don't know what you know, if that makes sense.
It makes sense. I guess my other point that comes back to this is we've talked about how amazing this are, but what are some barriers and challenges coaches face when they take on this approach? Because as you've alluded to, this is not easy.
No.
Worthwhile, but it's not easy. So what are some barriers and challenges?
Being covert is the one of the obstacles coaches will have. So many coaches, we need to take ourselves off the pedestal. And I'm not saying that in a derogatory manner. Sometimes it's just how we've built up. And what I mean by that is we need to let the players know is we don't have all the answers. We're not perfect. And we're on a journey to get better. So sharing with the players, look, I've had a think about my coach and I've watched it back. And I think I'm really good in these areas. But actually, I believe I can get better in these areas. I need your help with this. Let me share with you why so you see the value. But actually, when I first start doing it, I'm not going to be great at it. So we need to support and back each other, but this is why I'm doing it. So being overt like that, actually, it's allowing your support network where players, and the level of respect and rapport you will have with your players by doing that is phenomenal, by the way. Taking ourselves off the pedal, saying, I need to be the person with the answers. I need to be driving motivation, et cetera, et cetera. That's not coaching. That's a dictatorship for me. So if we can overtly share with the players and coaches around us, look, you know, back in, even if you've got a partner, they can go, look, I'm sharing this. Can you hold me accountable? You have to set some level of overtness to go, I'm going through change. This is why I'm doing it. It's going to be tough for me. I'm not going to be as smooth, but you guys can help me. And this is why is the step that's going to break down a lot of the barriers. And then understand you're not going to be great straight away. There's going to be pauses. We go, what do I do now? When do I step in? When do I not? Because it's a new skill. But if you as a coach are asking every single one of your players to do something they're uncomfortable with and go through it, you have to be the role model for that. And if you're saying, I'm now recognizing I'm a great coach, but I can be better, and there's critical elements I need to be better at, I owe it to my players to be better, I have to go through that transition of change. And I'm ready for it. It's going to be uncomfortable, but I'm going to be overt with it, and we're going to set up a support network to help me through that transition and change. And I'm not going to step back because I understand why I'm doing it.
Mark, this has been tremendous. Just so much information. I know coaches will take time listening to this multiple times to digest so much of the information. And maybe as a summary then, just so they can direct their thinking, give me the three things again that they need to really focus on.
Definitely film yourself first and just watch so you can hear your voice and watch your interaction with the players. Listen to how you're saying, how they react. Just the behavioral stuff is number one. Be mindful of your state. So how aware of your state, how good at you are regulating it. Find opportunities to do that in practice.
Awesome.
And then that last thing there, Chris, is give the players tools so they can self-evaluate, so you're not throwing 20 questions at them to get what you're looking for. You're giving them a way of self-thinking, self-managing, self-reviewing. That makes coaching so much easier.
It's wonderful. Mark Bennett, coaches, if you don't follow him, I don't know why you don't. I mean, first of all, we should all be following this guy. At PDS Coach is on Twitter, and then the website is pdscoaching.com. Go check it out. Tons of interesting stuff there and great shares all the time on his social media. You should definitely follow him. And this won't be the last time you and I talk, Mark. We'll definitely do some follow-up and we'll do some other things because I think this is such an important area. So thanks for taking the time for sharing with our coaches.
Oh, thank you, Chris. It's 28 years is a monster. So I know we've scratched the surface, but I hope it's been beneficial.
Well, it's all about pushing limits and stimulating thinking and all those different things that go with it. Because, you know, I think, as you said from the beginning, we're all trying as coaches to be better and do the best for our athletes. Nobody's doing it for a different reason. So if this is something that helps, then every coach should have their thinking stimulated by this conversation.
All right. Thanks for the opportunity, Chris. I do appreciate it.
To find out more about Coach and all we spoke about today, please take a look at the show notes for today's episode. I love to share the game and have basketball coaching conversations, so connect with me on social media. You can find all my social media information and all your membership, clinic, and consulting needs at basketballimmersion.com. That concludes today's episode. I know there are so many podcasts out there. Thank you for taking the time to listen to the Basketball Podcast with me, your host, Chris Oliver. Please subscribe and share the podcast with your friends and colleagues so that we can keep bringing you the best of what's out there and share the game.